Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. How are you doing? I wonder whether you are in the middle of dry January, perhaps. And if so, how is it going? Perhaps you have ditched the booze before Christmas. Maybe you've been sober for months. Whatever it is, you're very welcome to this podcast. As you know, we try and focus on all the positive aspects of health and well-being generally, underpinned by having made that choice to ditch the booze. I know some people are mindful drinkers. Some people manage to moderate. They have an off switch. I never did. But I do, as you know, I always suggest that whatever your situation, you always start with a minimum of 30 days alcohol free. In an ideal world, do 3 months, because a lot of the benefits don't kick in. If you are doing dry January, something I've been talking with a bunch of clients about is the fact that, you know, we have these expectations that we're going to feel amazing within 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And it doesn't always work that way. I mean, some of my clients are sleeping better and they feel like they're already a little bit more toned up. They've got a little bit more energy. You know, sometimes it does kick in quickly. But not for everyone. I certainly didn't get it right. having said that, of course, I now know there are lots of ways that you can help yourself. There are lots of great tips around nutrition and supplements and certain lifestyle changes that you can make that actually make the transition so much easier. And of course, that's the plug for my book, because it's all in there. Happy, Healthy, Sober, Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life. It's just out as an ebook at the moment. But it really is chock full of great information. And not just me, as I mentioned in last week's podcast, there's some great guests who have contributed as well. The other thing I thought I'd mention, because I thought it was really interesting, I noticed it in the press again this week. I've said lots of times that there are always articles in the media about wine or alcohol generally being good for you. You know, you've seen those pieces. It's good for your heart, red wine, good for your heart, all of that nonsense. And I used to love those. I used to just really hang on to those words, you know, with for grim death, really, thinking, yeah, everything's fine. And it was just justifying my ridiculous actions, you know, until I woke at 3 a.m. and my own conscience actually told the real story. But every now and then, there's a news report that tells it like it is. And I'm sure I've mentioned that many years ago, I was incensed that the health minister... Sally Baker, apologies if I got the name wrong, but anyway, this was years ago, and she did a piece about how just two glasses of wine can increase the risk of breast cancer. And I remember being just furious and going out of my way to try and disprove her. You know, I think I tried to get an interview with an oncologist at the time. I was, you know, I really went for it, because I was so determined and desperate to justify my own views. I really was. It's fascinating, isn't it, that you know, that all of this stuff, it just all tracks back to marketing, effectively. But there was a piece this week that in the Mail, I think it was, that the headline was "Just a Small Wine a Night Increases Heart Risk by 17%. It was by a health correspondent, Eleanor Haywood. And just reading from a tiny bit of it, it says, just one glass of wine or a beer a day can increase the risk of a life-threatening irregular heartbeat, research suggests. People who drank every day were 17% more likely to develop a common heart condition that causes an abnormally fast pulse. But the risk soared by 28 and 47%. For those who had up to two or more than four drinks, respectively. So four drinks, 47% increased risk of this common heart condition, they say here. And that's before you add in all the other conditions that may or may not be exacerbated by alcohol. I mean, for starters, right now, everyone is thinking about immunity. And if they aren't, they should be. Let's face it. We all need to take some responsibility, you know, for our own immunity. And alcohol definitely impacts on our immunity. It has an inflammatory effect on the gut. It does all kinds of stuff to just lower our immunity. It's terrible for respiratory problems, of course. And then obviously we get onto all the other illnesses. I think it's 200 illnesses and counting that alcohol, is impacted in. And of course, mental health and anxiety. I mean, it's just off the scale at the moment. It's actually starting to break my heart, some of the stuff I'm reading, to be honest, about, not just adults, but young people who are really suffering, really some unbelievable stuff going down right now with people who are just not coping and just not getting the help that they need for mental health issues. And I know it seems way too simplistic just to say quit the booze. I'm fully aware that A, not everyone can do that and has the support they need. And B, just by stopping the booze doesn't mean that you're no longer going to have depression. I'm fully aware of that. But I do know many people who have stopped drinking, and it's made a massive difference to their anxiety levels. And it doesn't mean that all depression's gone and that they don't have to take medication. In some cases they do, but it means they're better able to manage how they are. So, there's just absolutely no doubt. All those years I tried to convince myself. But the reality is there's no safe levels of alcohol. And the other really good bit of all of that is that when you actually reframe it all in your mind, when the light bulb comes on and you see it for what it is, you see that the emperor isn't actually wearing any clothes. I used to love that story when I was a kid. all the people thought that there he was in his colourful kit and it looked so amazing, but he wasn't actually wearing any clothes. It was a trick. And alcohol, isn't actually any good. And we might glamorise it. We do. We glamorise it till cows come home, don't we? But there really isn't anything good about it. And when you get to that point, it's so freeing. And I know you may not be feeling like that right now. I had a client who's, I think she's about 20 days sober, and she's doing well and she's feeling good and she's eating well and she's doing all the things that we're recommending. And there's so much positivity. When she lists the benefits, they're starting to ramp up already. And above all, that sense of joy is coming back that some of us have not even known since we were kids. A sense of kind of contentment and joy and a just a little glimmer of hope around stuff and an energy that we hadn't had for things we might want to do. Already she's starting to talk about potentially a new purpose, looking to more creativity in her life. So the changes are coming already at 20 days. But she admitted to me that what she's fearful of is when everything opens up again. There's a lovely sort of pub wine bar that she always goes to. And the associations there are so very strong with going there, having a lovely time, having that cold, chilled glass of something expensive and bubbling. It's all part of that sort of glamour and those associations that we build up. But the reality is, it doesn't matter what's in the glass. If the place is nice, if the people you're with are good, if the atmosphere is nice, if you've got, a nice glass, yeah, that is important. I don't want anything out of a cracked cup, thank you. It really doesn't matter what's in it. And it's perfectly okay if there's something alcohol-free in it. Let's make that also something grown up and really nice. You don't have to have a Coke or a juice. We've said this a ton of times, right? But it's all about reframing it. It's not the alcohol that makes occasions good. That's so ingrained in us, isn't it? That it's the alcohol that makes an event great fun or makes the meal taste better. It isn't. It's everything that's going on in your head. It's the associations. So yes, here's my phrase again. Keep the ritual, change the ingredients, go to the wine bar if you want to, as long as it doesn't start triggering off everything for you. But before you go, make sure that they're up with the curve and they've got some great alcohol-free drinks in, preferably some alcohol-free wines or fizz or beer, if that's what you like. Because any kind of hospitality venues that don't keep up with this trend are going to lose out. I'm sure you've seen the ads on the telly for Gordon's Gin. I mean, what a thing. Who'd have thought that? The ads are all across TV and radio. The ads pop up for Gordon's and you immediately think, oh, it's another alcohol advert. And there you go. It's 0%. You know, we've seen the same with Heineken and loads of the big companies. And these big companies would not be investing in this stuff if it wasn't a hugely growing market, and for a great reason. And of course, there are loads of amazing amazing artisan brands as well. Speaking of which, I'm going to bring you a little interview in a week or so with a woman who's produced a really unique drink that doesn't have really low in calories and sugar, and it's a very unique drink. It's called Slanjavar. You can look it up. I'm going to have a competition to win some as well, but it's really unique. I love the idea of these artisan kind of brewers who've really put so much time and energy and thought into the drink that they're going to create, the thing that they want them for themselves, you know. Anyways, I must remind you that if you have been doing Dry January, or if you have been a few rounds the block and you still want some tips for ditching the booze, perhaps you're up to 30 days or whatever, then we have an event. It's a free Zoom masterclass, I'm calling it. I'll be giving you tons of motivational tips and little exercises and lots of stuff around nutrition and things that we can do to just make the transition easier. So it's all going to be about health and well-being and mindset underpinned by ditching the booze. You are very welcome whatever stage you're at. So if you are just starting out, you're very welcome. But if you've been sober for ages, you're welcome, because it's really all about improving health and well-being. It's on 28th of January at 7:30. Obviously, spaces are limited, but you'd be very welcome to register. If you go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, you'll see it there and you can register. There'll be time for Q&A as well. So I just wanted to share information just freely to everyone. We do tons of coaching in the Sober Club, but let's make this free for everyone, particularly if you've been doing Dry January. This is going to be perfect for you, because hopefully it will spur you to carry on. And if you haven't done Dry January, well, you can start from the 28th. So please join us if you can. So 28th of Jan, 7:30 in the evening UK time, and make sure you register at thesoberclub.com, click on events, or just drop me a message and I'll send you the link if you're having trouble finding it. Don't forget, you can always follow my social media at Janie Lee Grace. I'm always kind of on there to pick up messages if you want to message me. Anyways, let me get to who I'm chatting to today. I thought it would be great to chat again to the lovely Lee Davey of 1000 Days Sober. I just love chatting with Lee. And rather than get someone to interview me about my book, you know, because obviously I want to share a few bits and pieces of my own story, I thought that Lee and I could maybe just have a jam. So I'm really chuffed that I just get to chat this week with the fabulous Lee Davey from 1000 Days Sober. And I kind of wanted to chat with Lee because, as we were just saying before we switched the mic on, we never bothered to do any prep. So we don't know where this will go. But it's just really nice to be able to chat with Lee. And obviously, I've been telling Lee about my new book. And rather than me just kind of talking about my book, I thought I'd let him ask me a few bits. So I thought we'd start, Lee, but we were just saying about books and how mega important books are in changing people's lives.
Oh, hugely. And again, let me just say, it's really nice to speak to someone who says the word chuffed. You don't get chuffed
in
Los Angeles. If I was to use that word chuffed in Los Angeles,
it could mean something else completely.
Yeah, it would be akin to me putting my hand up someone's skirt or something.
Really? How funny. Yeah, yeah. Oh, dear. I hope I don't come out with anything else. It's offensive.
I do. I think my 4-year-old daughter's got this like twang going on. She said to me this morning, she said, I want to tell me a story. And I went, yeah, okay. And she went, and dude, no rhyming. And here's the other thing, Jay. I've got to tell you this. Right. So, you know, I got a doll's house for Christmas. You know, we're in the UK. We got doll's house and dolls. It's like, right, this is Peter. This is Jane. Okay. All right. Not in LA. This is my daughter. So, okay, this is my doll. All right. What's she called? Oh, she's called California Rockstone. This is a 4-year-old California Rockstone. All right, cool. Okay. This is Peter.
gets to stay Peter, really.
Well, you know, that's a good segue, actually, because do you remember when we were kids growing up in the UK, of course, our books were Janet and John.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I always remember my mum telling me much, much later that she had to tell the school to stop giving me Janet and John books because they were brain dead. Like I would read them in 10 seconds and be like, yeah, like, give me my next book. And I want to talk about that if it's okay, because I think it really, it's a really interesting conversation. Let me just grab a book. One second while we're talking about books.
Yeah.
This book I touched upon called Living with Intensity.
Okay. Who's the author?
Susan Daniels and Michael Pachowski.
Mm-hmm.
It focuses on this work by a Polish psychiatrist and psychologist called Kazimierz Dąbrowski. And in a very nutshell, he talks about the highly intelligent and highly sensitive. And how, as you're growing up, there's this war that is raised within you of your biological need and desire to be autonomous. And for you to, if you are highly intelligent and highly sensitive, to really operate at the far reaches of emotion, to be really crazy happy and really, really, really crazy sad. That's your autonomy. But society wants you to fit in and be normal.
Down the middle.
Part of that, yep. And part of that fitting in and normalization is drink alcohol.
Yeah, absolutely.
And guess what happens when you're highly intelligent and highly sensitive and people around you don't understand what you're going through and they're not able to support you while you're expressing those emotions, is you hide them and you stuff them into yourself. And then you start reading Janet and John books when you really should be reading, I don't know, War and Peace, because you don't want to be seen as an idiot by the other people, paradoxically, for wanting to be smart and intelligent. And I think, I come across so many people who have problems with alcohol who are creative geniuses, super intelligent, super smart. And what they've done is they've hidden all that. Mm. And the reason that they end up at 1000 Day Sober or the Sober Club is because they are just starting to realize and see a little glint, a little chink of light of who they really are and what they're capable
of. Totally.
Did you ever get that?
Absolutely, all the time. It really is this thing of people keeping themselves small. They literally hide away and keep themselves small. Sometimes, you know, relationships get involved in that as well. And people feel that their work, you know, they're kind of living someone else's life almost, the life of their partner, and they don't feel it's, you know, enough to be who they are. But yeah, I think we spoke about this last time we had a chat about how absolutely amazing it is when people ditch the booze and then suddenly they do catch sight of who they are and they start to get this whole new mojo for a whole new life, you know, for creativity comes in, or they write a book, or they, you know, start a charity or change careers completely, or, you know, it's amazing. The transformations I've seen in the Sober Club, I'm sure you're the same. I mean, it's just incredible. And I don't believe for one second those things would have happened if they were still drinking, or at least it would have taken a hell of a lot longer.
And on the drinking, you know, like you know, like, I mean, let's go back 19 years, actually. I gave up smoking, reading Alan Carr's Easy the Way to Stop Smoking Permanently. And the idea that a book could help me stop smoking after failing so many times seemed so preposterous that I had to read it just to prove to people who were telling me that it worked and it was bullshit. Mm. And then I stopped smoking. And I kid you not, like in 19 years, I have not craved a single cigarette. Like, and then, so then you're like, wow, how is that even possible? But back then, Jeannie, I was like 20, 22, 23. So it was like, you know, it's like I was young. Mm. I was too young to recognize the power in literature. Mm. And then 10 years later, when my life is really going to shit, I read Alan Carr's Easy Way to Control Alcohol. And then that absolutely changed my life. And I often say to people, you know, I get people come to me and they'll be saying, I really need your help. And I'll be going, okay, yeah, we've got a Strive Method for Addictions group coaching course. We've got one starting on the 31st of January, for example. Do you want to jump on that? Yeah, so how much is that then? £795. How much? You're charging people for that? F you, this is ridiculous. AA is for free, right? And I always say to them, well, you don't have to pay $7.95. I paid $7.99 for a book. All right. But the book only took me so far.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Alan Carr taught me how to quit alcohol. And if you, I don't know if you ever read, did you read that book, Janie?
I have read it. Yeah. I mean, it's quite, it's what you're saying is quite interesting because I also read a book that I read Jason Vail's book, which was very, very similar to Alan Carr's. In fact, Jason worked with Alan Carr, as I'm sure you know, for a lot of years in his clinic. So I read Kick the Drink Easily a few years ago. Like, I mean, I'm talking maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I read Kick the Drink Easily and I stopped drinking for quite a while, right? But, and this is a quite an important thing, I now realise that I'd got the logic piece, the alcohol is bad for you piece, and I feel better without it piece, but I hadn't caught sight of the life is better without any bit. So when something tipped up in my life, whatever it might be, my feeling was, well, I don't have a problem with alcohol anymore. I can just have one.
I can drink it.
I can just have one. So I went back to it. So it, so as you say, it got me so far. And I do think those books about the logic are really, really important. And I do think it's incredible, as you say, how a book can change people's lives. It's unbelievable. It is.
Yeah. He, the thing that I remember with the book was, I mean, it was different for me because I'd already read the smoking book. By the time I picked up his drinking book, I was done. Yeah. Like I knew the method would work and I was done. But where I felt not let down by Alan, God bless his soul, because he's 10 feet under now, isn't he? But I remember saying in his book, whatever you do, don't change your lifestyle. Like, you know, like if you go out all the time, just go out. You don't need a drink. Alan, are you kidding me? Did you hang around in the places that I used to hang around? There's no way you would want to go to the pub when you're not drinking alcohol. So there was a part where it was like, okay, I don't drink anymore, but now I've got all these, like we talked a little bit at the outset, right? You know, like now all of a sudden my intelligence is emerging. My sensitivity is emerging. My awareness is emerging. My spirituality is trying to poke its head up and say, hey, remember me. I'm not as wimpy as you think I am. So I've got all these kind of like ideas floating and hammering me. And then I go to Alan Carr's book and it's ended. Like there's nothing.
That's it, yeah.
And I didn't have a community. So I just did it myself, you know? So I guess... my question to you, I'm going to put you on a spot here, is for me, Alan Carr wrote the book. Jason Vail copied the book. Annie Grace copied the book, right? With little twists, right? So my question to you is, how is yours going to be different than what we've read before that people are going to go, oh, wow, you know?
Well, I think it is completely different. I mean, I love all of those books. And I, as I say, I think they're really essential. But I think the way my books is completely different is it's the book that I needed and have needed the whole time. Because for me, as we've already touched on, there are many ways to get sober. There are many ways to stop drinking. And I don't care which way you choose. It doesn't matter to me how you ditch the booze, whether it's an Alan Carr book or a seminar or AA. It doesn't matter, however you do it. But the really important bit for me is what happens next. So it's almost like, you know, the whole of your life, for me, everything revolves around optimum health and well-being, physical and emotional and spiritual health and well-being. I've never really got the person who wants to stop drinking, but then they kind of white knuckle it and actually they still really want a drink. And by the way, they're unbelievably unhealthy and they're miserable and they're smoking and all the rest of it. It's like, well, almost what's the point? You know, for me, it's about, I suppose I'm greedy. I want everything. I want absolute optimum health and well-being and happiness. Doesn't everybody, you know, that's what we want. And it's underpinned by sobriety for me, because don't forget, I used to be queen of health and well-being, you know, allegedly. You know, I've already written 5 books on health and well-being. And yet I was tiptoeing around the bloody great big elephant in the room that was alcohol, because, you know, I didn't see that. Now I see that. It's the missing piece of the jigsaw. The book I've written, yes, absolutely covers really, hopefully, really strong, in-depth stuff for the first 30 days of ditching the booze, and the, you know, the mindset and the nutrition and the brain chemistry and all of that. But then it goes on to talk about just about everything else you could possibly wish to consider that you're going to want to unravel next, as it were. And so that's why it's a book for people who are sober curious or just starting out, because you'll get everything you need in terms of the, you know, the mindset changes and the way you can do this best for your physical health as well as emotional. But then even if you're 6 years sober, 10 years sober, doesn't matter. It's all the health and well-being stuff. So that's why it's different. It's completely different in that respect. So, and also, you know, because, I mean, I've done a ton of training. I've been there, done it, got the T-shirt in health and well-being, but I don't know everything. And so I wanted to bring in experts who can really talk about their subject with great credibility. So, for example, I'm trained in NLP. I'm an NLP practitioner, but I didn't want to write the NLP section. You know, I'm happy share some of the exercises that I use with my clients, and they're in the book, but I wanted to get a real top expert to write it. So that's what I did. Similarly with, you know, I talk about, well, everything, you know, obviously nutrition. There's loads and loads of stuff about nutrition. And I've got an amazing doctor, Gemma Newman, the plant power doctor, who's written a fantastic section in the book about vegan stuff, about the menopause. I mean, she's written a whole bunch of stuff. There's a naturopath in there, you know, and on and on and on. So so it really is a kind of a, it's a bit of a health and well-being Bible that happens to be underpinned by sobriety.
I like that you said menopause there, because I think one aspect of all this thing that I see missing from alcohol literature is actually around menopause, you know, and you know, the particular differences between women and men, you know, like I'm in a group. I'm still in there, but I just finished a coaching program where it was really drawn to my attention, you know, women's period cycles and how that interacts with sobriety and how that interacts with their mental well-being and their health. And it's almost like I have an aura ring. Oh no, I don't, because it's charging, but I have an aura ring, a sleep ring, right? And when I wake up in the morning, if I haven't had enough sleep, it would say to me, like, don't exercise today, just chill out. You know, and I was getting this vibe from the women that I was in the groups. It was like, oh, today I'm not gonna grind today. Today I'm just gonna relax and do some yoga and just chill out, because that's what my body's telling me to do. So really important that you're touching upon that stuff.
It is. And I think you know, there's quite a lot in the book about hormonal health, perimenopause and menopause. And as you say, I mean, it's quite a big thing. I've covered it on the podcast a few times, because bizarrely, most women actually don't really know enough about how to look after hormonal health. I mean, it's only really recently that I've realized that there are tests available for women. I actually didn't know, you know, and so many women suffer in silence. They suffer all these really shit symptoms forever and a day, because they just don't realize what help is available. But one of the really key things that, you know, you may have heard me say before, because I bang on about it a lot, is my frustration that when women do rock up to a GP and say, oh, I'm having problems with, you know, premenstrual tension or with perimenopause or with menopausal symptoms, and I've got mood swings and I've got I can't sleep and I've that, then in so many cases, the GP says, okay, here's some antidepressants, and or here's some HRT. But they don't say how much are you drinking.
Yeah. No? Or whip your womb out.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many clients I've got who are on antidepressants and possibly HRT in some cases, but they've never asked about how much they're drinking. How can you weigh up what's needed for anxiety and depression and mood and all of that if you're messing with your brain chemistry all the time? You know, I know it must be really difficult. I'm not saying I know the answer. God knows it's hard enough, you know, because people lie anyway. Even if the GP does ask you, you're going to lie, right? but given that they know that, I mean, there's just got to be a better way. I mean, the good news is that more and more women are becoming aware of this now. There's a big movement of women who are kind of clocking this now and realize, okay, right, so hold on a minute. If I stop drinking, how much better is that going to make me feel? Answer, a lot. The amount of women that have managed to just overcome all those. Yeah. I'm not saying it's 100%, you know, cured just because you stop drinking. Of course, some women are still going to want medication, obviously. But whatever, we've said this before. There's no doubt whatsoever that you know, alcohol exacerbates hormonal issues, mental health issues, anxiety, everything. Actually, there isn't anything that stopping doesn't improve.
I like what you said earlier on was you said you've wrote 5 books. You was a health and wellness queen, but the elephant in the room is the alcohol, right?
Yeah.
And how I like to look at this is look at alcohol as almost a springboard, right? So quitting alcohol allows you to get on the path. And if you have two choices, you know, you can be that miserable git. Not two choices, let's not polarize it, but you can be a miserable git who really wants to drink but doesn't want to drink and he hasn't changed any other area of his life, right? Mm. So there's that guy. There's the outlier. I had one this morning. I don't know if it's true or not. Guy emailed me and said, I just want to thank you for everything you've done to me through your podcast. I am now in control of alcohol and I would never have been so if it wasn't for you. Wow. Like, you don't get those emails every day. Mm. Like, it's either, like, I rarely get someone say to me, I'm in control of alcohol and I'm okay. And if I hear that, there's a little bit of a bullshit detector normally goes off in my head. But I'm sure
it
happens.
Do you mean he means he moderates his drinking? Is what
yes,
you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah.
And then you've got somebody who, and I think me and you are on the same page of this, is, okay, they come to us and it's like, we want to quit alcohol. And it's like, okay, take a step back a minute. Say, what are your top values in your life? Who do you want to become? How do you want to operate? Are you willing to put health as like a real top value? Are you willing to put family? How many people say, yeah, family is my top value? And it's like, okay, so family's your top value, is it? Yeah. All right. So we spend most of our time sleeping. I can't remember how many hours that is. Mm. You spend 80,000 hours working. Right. Are we really putting family as number one value if we're spending 80,000 hours working in our life? I don't think so. Right. So if they put health to the top of their values chain, then alcohol becomes something that you're not going to want to do because it doesn't align with your value of health,
exactly.
Right? And so what I look at is this, the alcohol thing, it's almost like we're putting you on a path to health and well-being. Like we're saying, here you are, here's the path to health and well-being. Alcohol is your first step, maybe in a lot of instances, and then take your time to knock the other dominoes down. Mm, so for example, for me, I stopped drinking, over a decade ago. Last night, I was making dinner for the family. We do this Green Chef thing here. They deliver the stuff to the house and you can just follow the recipes. And Liza said, oh, I've taken out some Brussels sprouts so you can add to it too, you know. And I said, I have a feeling my body's not going to like it, but let's give it a go. So, because I'm very particular what I put in my body, right? Because I did the elimination diet, the Will Cole thing. I had some sprouts last night and my stomach just went woof. Immediately I'm like, no more Brussels sprouts. I'm so attuned to how my body interacts with food now, but it took me 10 years to get there because I was busy knocking other dominoes down, such as I gotta quit sugar. I'm choosing to be vegan. I'm choosing not to drink sugar. Mm. I'm choosing not to drink caffeine. And then eventually it resulted in this complete, okay, let's just take everything out of your diet and put it back in to see what is going on. Mm. If I'm drinking, Janie, my body's not going to know what's going on.
No, absolutely.
You know, how are you going to stop them? How are you going to stop the midnight kebabs and the eating your Singapore chow mein with your fingers when you're drinking? How can you stop yourself? You can't.
I know. It's incredible. I mean, you say, you know, you recognize that food didn't suit you. Isn't it incredible how many years all of us have alcohol, feel like shit, and then do it all again the next night. We wouldn't do that with food. We don't do that with food. None of us. Is it? If it's a food that doesn't agree with it, it's like, Christ, I'm not having prawns. Yeah, I'll never eat them again, right?
I don't eat,
you know, because they made me ill. And yet we do it every goddamn night of our lives. It's
well, so I think there's two layers of that, right? So, because I think this is a really important point. There is giving Brussels sprouts to a kid. Let's use that as the metaphor. If you give Brussels sprouts to a kid and you boil the shit out of him like my mum used to, it is likely that the kid is going to vomit and say, I do not want to eat those, right? That's one way of looking at it. Then the other way of looking at it is you eat all this stuff, including alcohol, right? You're drinking, you're eating all this stuff, all this takeaway food, all this processed food. And amongst all this stuff is a smoothie you make, really healthy, and it's got peanut butter in it. Now, what you don't know is that peanut butter is fucking you up. It is causing inflammation in your gut, but you don't know because you've got all this shit coming in and your body is numb. It doesn't understand anything. So you say, okay, I'll stop drinking alcohol, and that really helps you, but you've still got this little gut and you don't understand where it's coming from. So then you think, oh, it must be the kebabs. You stop eating the kebabs. So it's this constant kind of like drive, is like that's I'm sure it sounds like you're doing in your book, is don't stop when you stop drinking alcohol. Keep pushing and living a life as healthy as you can, and at some point you will be like, holy shit, goji berries inflame my stomach. Who would have known? I thought I was a healthy hippie.
Actually, talking about goji berries, I'm not allowed to go anywhere near goji berries.
Right.
Because I went through a phase where I thought they were like super healthy. And so I bought these goji berries. And my husband, I said to him, oh, you know, you should try one of these. So he has a bunch of these goji berries. And one of them must have been really hard. And he's absolutely convinced it pulled his tooth out. So he's like, bastard goji berries. I'm not going to go anywhere near them. They pulled my tooth. They're the reason I have to have a crown.
They're not healthy. I have a missing tooth.
Is that a goji berry one?
It wasn't a goji berry. It was a kebab.
Oh, God.
Drunk as anything, eating a kebab, and a bone smashed my tooth in.
Ouch. Wow. Wow.
Had all my front teeth chipped. Opening Budweiser bottles with my teeth.
Shit, really?
What an idiot.
What do we do to ourselves? What do we do?
Goji berries, all joking aside, they're nightshades. So for some people, they're inflammatory. But if you're eating an unhealthy lifestyle anyway, you will never know that the goji berry is inflammatory. You will assume that it is a superfood because what we tend to do is we believe what the world tells us.
Yeah, totally. Yeah? I do think it is this. What you're talking about is this kind of uncovering these different layers, isn't it? Both
and taking your time.
Yeah. And it's both physical and emotional, you know, because you're right. You've got to address all these that, you know, you start with the alcohol piece. Then the next thing for many people is just sugar. That's often next, you know, and then you work your way through whatever it might be. But then you've got, meanwhile, all the emotional layers are going on as well. And I find that really, really interesting because, again, you can't really rush it. There's some things that, you know, I think within the first however many, certainly 30 days, perhaps 2 months, you can't start addressing everything. You've just got to get your head straight with where you're at. You know, I had a client who, I think she was about 2 weeks into ditching the booze. She was doing really well, and she was positive and she'd made her decision, and she was committed. She knew her why and all of that stuff. It was all going well. And then suddenly she was floored by shame and guilt. Of stuff that had perhaps happened when she was drinking, you know, absolutely floored by it. Now, there is a time, you know, in a place when it's worth taking a look back at some of that stuff. But 2 weeks into sobriety ain't it.
It ain't the
time to go digging out the photos from the attic and writing letters to people, even if you burn them. You know, it can be a long process.
In my work, we deal with shame in month four.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely not week two. It's really interesting. You know, it's really interesting at the moment, all the stuff that's going on. It's like shame is like the lowest vibration, isn't it? Isn't that like the lowest vibration you can have? Shame.
I would imagine.
Yeah, it is. And at the moment, you know, with all the kind of fear-based stuff that we have going on, certainly here in the UK, there's a lot of people feeling shame. You know, you're meant to feel shame if you happen to step onto a pavement, there's somebody else on the pavement. God, you know, the pressure on everyone is huge. So much fear and so much shame, and it's such a low vibration to operate at, and we have to kind of just be really mindful of that. And I don't know, just, you know, sounds very woo-woo,
there's a flip side to that though, in as much as nowadays you can call somebody up and say, hey, how's it going, and they'll say, fucking shit, I'm terrified about losing my job. Yeah. I feel like I'm a failure as a dad. I'm scared and terrified. I'm angry. So now the bar has never been lower for people to be more vulnerable.
I know.
Because like everybody's in the same boat. So, you know, there's a flip side of it that, you know, I always say this. I think it was Michael Beckwith. So I'm lucky in LA pre-COVID that I could trundle along to Hollywood and actually go to a Gappy spiritual church, which is Michael Beckwith. And people are thinking, who is he? He was in The Secret, right? Mm. And he is a magnificent inspirational speaker, you know? And he was saying that one day, you know, you can notice what's going on in the world, right? You have to be aware of what's going on in the world, but you don't have to be too interested in it. Like you don't have to be interested in it to the point of view that it really starts to move you out of emotional homeostasis to the extremes. Like I'm really sad, I'm really anxious, I'm really fearful. Why? Because of COVID. Okay, well, I'm not really angry, I'm not really sad, I'm not really, like 2020 for me, greatest year of my life, right? While all this shit and fun is going on around me, all I need to know, it fucking kills me, it's gonna kill my family. So I shouldn't be really around people. I have to wear masks. I have to wash my hands all the time and just be really sensible. And if shit goes south, you know, I have supplementations that I take. I know where the hospital is, et cetera, right? But that's it. I don't have to lament about it. I don't have to worry about it. Like when I'm not, good news I want to share with you. I'm not in the freelance poker world anymore. I'm out of it, right? They cut my salary after 3 months into COVID by half, right? And I'm like, oh no, how am I going to manage? Because now I have to look after my parents as well, because he's lost his tailor job in Koreatown, right? So I'm like, I'm look after my family, I look after my extended family, and I just cut my pay by 50%. What am I going to do? Do you know what I did, Janie? I took a bounce back loan and I invested it in my education. I didn't use it to spend money on cover my costs. I didn't cut my costs. I took that money and I invested $17,000 in my education to enable me to earn more money through the pandemic and COVID, right? What's going on there? What's going on there? There's one person who is like, oh my God, this is doom and gloom, I've got no money. And then there's another person going, okay, I'm going to actually invest in, and I'm going to do something different, right? Mm. It's fear.
Yeah,
and it's freedom. And alcohol, and free of alcohol, allows that freedom to start to emerge. And with the right guides and the right mentors holding your hand while you're leaping into the unknown, right? And guess what, folks? Every time you leap into the unknown, every time, we're okay. Mm. Me and Janie right now, you listening, we probably could recount the most terrible things that have happened to us in our lives. Rape, incest, abuse, losing our jobs, divorce, death of loved ones, etc. And we're still here because we're designed to be here, right? Mm. But we need help. We need guidance. We need courses. We need coaches. We need books, right? And we need them to be as expansive and, you know, like I love the fact that you say you have different people talking about different things.
Lots.
Because that's so fantastic, you know?
Yeah, no, it is. It's true. And you're right. You know, not every single piece of it resonates with everyone, or there might be a time when it's right for you and the time when it isn't, you know.
Yes.
I know in my first book, the first book that I wrote that kind of kickstarted my whole kind of health career, was called Imperfectly Natural Woman. And in that book, I actually said at the beginning, you know, if you turn to any page here and it just sort of starts to make you feel, I don't know, guilty that you're not doing enough, then just stop. Just choose another page. Start somewhere else.
Yeah.
Start small. It's the small change, big difference approach. You know, no one can do everything at once. And I think that's the beauty of this kind of imperfectly natural hat that I've worn, you know, because I do allow, you know, I point a finger back at myself. I don't get everything right. Of course I don't. But it's whatever you feel resonates with you, what feels like the most important thing. But as you say, for where your values are at any one time, you know, some people in the sober club are, they're really on the right on the edge of trying to determine what's next for them in their lives. And there are two ways of looking at that. You know, people can go, oh my God, you know, I've lost a job. You know, I'm safe. I've got a home and everything, but I've lost my job. What am I going to do? How awful is that? And the other spin on it is, wow, how exciting. I've got an empty page. And now I'm in touch with the stuff that I love. You know, I was trying to inspire people to get back in touch with what they maybe even used to love doing as kids, because, you know, that's the other thing about drinking. It makes you, as we said earlier, keeps you small, but sometimes it can mean that you haven't got anything going on in your life because you've completely forgotten what you used to like doing.
Yeah.
I mean, can't think of a single goddamn thing. Some people, you know, you ask them sort of, well, what's great about you? What's unique about you? What do you love? And they get nothing. Nothing.
And that's attached to shame as well.
Yeah.
So for me to say, 2020 was the best year of my life and I invested 17,000, I'm not allowed to say those things, because if I do, I'm being a Billy Big Potato. I'm getting above my station. I'm being arrogant. I'm being too cocky, too confident. So all of that feedback when you're younger really makes you small. You know, and one of my biggest lessons in the last like 12 months has been, no, Lee, you're a super powerful individual. Stop being ashamed of that and just admit that, you know. What you were just talking about there, there's a little exercise that we do in the Strive Method for Addictions. I'd like to share it with you if you like, because I think it'd be really useful. So, you know, when you're talking about people don't know what's going on and they don't know what they're passionate about and they don't know what they're going to do next type of thing. So we have this exercise called the Path of Least Resistance. And it comes from, I'm missing his name. He'll come back to me. The book is called The Path of Least Resistance, right? And basically, if you think about your life externally and internally, let's just think externally right now, okay? And think about New York City, right? So New York City, there's skyscrapers everywhere. Okay, there's big, huge buildings everywhere. So the flow of wind, the energy flow of wind, it is determined by the structures. It has to go where the skyscrapers tell the wind to go. It can't go anywhere else, right? So creatively, we think to ourselves, okay, what are the external structures in our life? And how is that channeling our energy? And are we happy with that? So just think about me living in Ogmore Vale. What are my external structures? Well, they're the pub. It's the motorway that takes me to my job, which was Port Talbot Steelworks, right? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So these are the external structures. But we also have mental structures, our beliefs, our worldviews, our culture, et cetera. But let's just think about the external structures for a minute. If I want to stop drinking and my external structures remain as they are, the energy flow of Lee Davey is always going to end up in the pub. It's always going to end up in Port Talbot Steelworks. So I always tell my troop, get a great big sledgehammer, smash those social structures apart, smash those structures apart. Then say to yourself, this is you and nothing. What is a treasure? How are we going to get there? What external structures do we need to create in our life and internally that enable our energy to flow there quickly. Because a mentor of mine, Janie, said to me, results don't take time. They take courage. Mm. And I was like, that is amazing. I'm going to use that. And then like literally 2 weeks ago, reading a book, and this guy, this book called True Purpose, not even particularly great book, but this one thing changed my life. He said, what would your life look like if you only had a year to live?
Mm, yeah.
Everybody who's read a self-help book has answered that question,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I answered it. I would spend more time experiencing experiences with Liza, Zia, and Jude. And I would take more risks if we're 1,000 days sober to push it to a point where I could realize in my lifetime, my dream to reach 1 million people and to pass it over to someone else. And then I did something that I've never done before, answering this question. Why aren't I doing it now?
Mm, yeah.
And then that quote came into my head. Results don't take time, they take courage. Mm. And I realized that the reason I'm not doing all those things was money. Money. I had a big block around money. I sucked it in, Janie, and I said to myself, if I had a year to live, would money stop me now? Well, no, it wouldn't.
No.
Why? Because I would smash through my upper limit around money, and I would just go and ask people. And then suddenly I realized I'm surrounded by people with money, and I could literally touch and get my hands in a couple of weeks on hundreds of thousands of pounds through credit cards, through loans, through whatever means that the institutions of our world are willing to give to me. Mm. And there's me saying, I have got no money. Mm. It's bullshit. All I needed was the courage to say, I'm going to get an investor. I'm going to get 100K off him. I'm going to give him 1% of my company. And I'm so terrified, but I'm going to do it anyway. And all of a sudden, time is condensed.
Yeah. I love right. that. I know. I love it. I love the piece about courage. It's so true. I wrote a blog post about something similar about courage and facing up to, you know, what we need to do. And I use that line from have you seen We Bought a Zoo? That really lovely movie with Matt Damon.
I haven't, but I know of it.
It's such a lovely movie. You should watch it. It's so cool. But there's this lovely line in there, because I've watched it so many times with the kids. There's just this fabulous line in there where he Matt Damon's telling his teenage son. His teenage son wants to go and chat up a girl. He's only about 14 or something, and he's you know, terrified. And he says to him, listen, you just need 20 seconds of courage. That's all it takes, just 20 yes. seconds of courage. You know? And I love that. It's just 20 seconds of courage, right? You just take that deep breath and that's it. And you're in and you make that decision.
I've been writing about this a lot lately, but I always thought that I was ugly when I was younger because I had a lot of spots, a lot of acne. And in a very polarized way, all the good-looking boys got all the good-looking women. It's just the way it was. We lived in a very small town. So I always thought I was ugly. Somebody, I picked it up from somewhere that you've at least got to ask. So even though I felt I was ugly, I literally would go up to girls in discos and say, do you like me? Do you like me? Do you like me? Can I kiss you? Can I kiss you? Can I kiss you? And every now and then, one of them would say, yeah. You know, every now and then. It never changed the fact that I thought I was ugly because I just wasn't mature enough to understand it. But I was fortunate enough that there was something that happened in my upbringing, probably related to something negative, that built into me, probably football, right? Built into me the courage to do certain things that I didn't, that I wasn't ordinarily other people wouldn't have done. Mm. Now, that's not to say that I'm just like a super courageous person. I never left my first relationship because I was a coward. Like I didn't have the courage to leave that relationship, right? But it's important to note that like so many of the things that we play out today, both negatively and positively, they all stem from how we were raised when we were younger, which relates to what you were talking about earlier on about that low vibration shame. Mm. All our shame comes from likely being abandoned either emotionally or physically by our parents, that kind of stuff, you know. Mm. So Yeah. And how do you overcome shame? How do I overcome shame? Read books. Mm. Read books and follow the thread. Mm. Do you ever do that, Janie? Yeah. You read a book and then it's like, we'll read your book. And then you'll be like, you know, you introduce us to a specialist. And then we go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, totally. And then absolutely. And you must be like me. You must kind of, you'll get recommended to a book and then you go, oh my God, how can I not have known about that before? What the hell? How can I miss out on that? You know, I've recommend obviously lots of books all the time, but, and people always say, I was talking to somebody today and I was talking about the importance of journaling, you know, and just writing stuff down. And I was talking about Julia Cameron, you know, author of The Artist's Way. And this person was sort of, you know, felt ashamed that she'd not heard of it. Well, you know, what's that lovely phrase? You don't know what you don't know, right?
I know.
You only know it when you know it, okay? So no one ever needs to feel any shame or guilt or anything at all that you haven't come across something yet. It'll come, you'll come to it when it's right for you, right? But yeah, I mean, I spend my life recommending books and I am an absolutely voracious reader. So we're kind of back where
that incident that you just said, you know, that little conversation that you just had, you talked about with your friend. This is one of the things I'm always talking about in my tribe, right? Is push the edges and get into the subtlety and the nuance of conversations to understand what the hell is going on and raise your awareness of the difference between conscious and unconscious living, right? So I don't know this person, but it sounds to me like when she's like, oh my God, like I'm almost like embarrassed that I don't know that this book exists. That's almost like an approval thing, right? Like I can't say that because I need you to approve of me that I got my shit together. I'm knowledgeable. And there's no way that I wouldn't know about that book because if you feel that I don't know about that book, you're going to not think well of me. And that's going to affect my self-esteem. Mm. And this is one of the reasons why we drink, because we need other people to love us and like us on social media, in the pub, in our house, in our bed. And when we don't get it, because we're not able to get it ourselves, we get all anxious, freaked out, lonely, lost, and we drink alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. So even in the subtleties of a little conversation that you're having with someone, if you're reading a book like Janie's and you're raising your awareness and your consciousness about, hey, did I act consciously then? Did I act unconsciously then? Sorry, I'm on a roll now. I'm going to give you another little one. Just downstairs just now, my daughter, she's 4. She says this all the time. Look, 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 look. There are two reasons she's saying that, I think. One, people aren't present anymore. So the adults around her are not present. And she's like, she has to say, look, 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 right? Not on the phone in our house because like my wife bans it, but other things, right? Mm. Look, look, look. Kids are intuitive. They know when you're not being present with them, even when you're there with them, right?
Yeah.
But then there's the other thing. She's so excitable. Look, 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 look. This morning, I said, wow. That's like your favorite word, but I said it in a kind of a jokey kind of way. And Liza, my wife, pulled me and she said, do you think there's a better way of doing that? And immediately I felt defensive. So now I'm training myself. When I'm defensive, why am I defensive? I'm defensive because shame is arising in me.
Yeah.
Because I realize that when she's saying, look, 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 and I make a snarky little comment, she's going to think she's doing something wrong. Mm. So she's going to stop saying, look, 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 and she's going to close herself down because she's being trained, if I'm going to continue to be snarky. Yeah, she's going to be trained. You can't say that to people, right? So where does that come from? Comes from an old part of me, comes from my old man. Right. Typical northern working class, you know, state kind of guy. So then it's like, OK, I need to be vulnerable enough in that moment to recognize I don't want to speak that way and I shouldn't speak that way. To apologize to a 4-year-old and to not rant at my wife for pointing it out, but to thank her. Right. Mm. That to me, honestly, 10 years after I stopped drinking, 10 years is me really working hard at being conscious. Mm. I could not have done that in year 2, in year 3, in year 4. We can't, because I didn't have the courage. We can condense time, but I didn't have the courage, Janie. Mm.
No, I get that completely.
I just didn't have it.
Mm. Yeah, it really is all about being authentic. And when you're authentic, you do get shit wrong sometimes.
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
Anyways, we could natter for hours, couldn't we?
Hey, it's a good job we don't. It's a good job we don't prepare for these things. Imagine how shit they would be.
Yeah,
I know why you get.
We might have a structure though. We might have a structure if we prepared.
I know why you get me on it. I think every now and then you get a little bit tired with podcasts and you think to yourself, do you know what? If I get Leon, he'll just talk shit. He'll just talk shit for an hour. And I could just relax.
Exactly the reason. All these experts who talk sense.
Let's get someone on and mix it up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's true. Good. Anyways, so tell us what you're doing at the moment, what you've got going on.
Wow, what am I doing at the moment? I'm flying at the moment, Janie. Absolutely flying. We have a group coaching program, Strive Method for Addictions, starting on January 31st. 6-month workshop. It's fantastic. Come and join it. Go to 1000 Days Sober website and get into that kind of like pipeline. And we're actually running a live workshop on January 22nd. And that will be me explaining to everybody how I became someone that doesn't drink alcohol. And in February, I'm going to be running a 3-day intensive for people who want to be sober coaches. So, you know, those people who are stop drinking and they want to give back to the world. I'm opening up the doors for that. Not quite sure what the price is yet, so I can't share. Yeah, I'm playing around with prices a little bit at the moment. So, trying to get that right blend. My goal is to reach 1 million people. So I do have some plans to do that at much lower price points. We started writing a book.
Right.
So the Strive Method is going out in 6 different books. First book is Stuck. And my team are working on that right now. So that will be out in an ebook, likely £4.99. And if you can't afford £4.99, write me an email and I'll give it to you for nothing.
So I'll interview you for that one then, yeah? Yeah. We'll have another chat.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Cool. And I just want to say, like, massive, massive kudos to you for writing your 6th book. Like, this book, I'm not writing this book. Like, I got people writing it for me. Like, I'm telling them, and they're going to write it and I'm going to look at it, because, you know, it takes a lot of courage and a lot of like effort and commitment to sit down and write a book. So I really hope it flies, Janie. I'm going to read it. It's out on ebook. I'm going to read it. I'm going to spread it around my little tribe. And
it is a thing. It's a real thing writing a book. There's no two ways about it. When I wrote my first one, it was like, it's like having another baby. You know, it really is. You invest so much in it. It's quite unbelievable. And the other thing that's really actually quite frustrating is that almost as soon as you've written it, there'll be something that you wish you'd added in.
Yeah.
Already, you know, the bloody thing only came out 2 weeks ago as an ebook. And already I'm thinking, sod it. I've, in the last couple of weeks, you know, as you say, I'm always learning just like you. And I've grasped this another whole piece about the brain chemistry stuff that I hadn't got before. It's like, oh, bugger. I could have put that in the book. And I'm so frustrated that I haven't. So, you know, what can you do? You just make a note of it. And it's book 2, isn't it? But you know, it's a commitment. It's a thing. I mean, I'm proud of it because it was, I did it across the whole of the first lockdown and the various ins and outs of tears that we had, you know, an awful lot of tears were shed.
What you did there for people listening, actually, because I think, again, really important point just to close out. When you said to yourself, when resistance said to you, oh, you need to add more in the book, that is a ploy from resistance to stop you releasing the freaking thing and never getting it done.
Yeah, true. So, very true.
So the fact that you turn around, the fact that you noticed that and you're aware enough to say, no, this is going out, I'm shipping this, right? Just effing do it, as my friend always says.
Exactly. You don't have to get it right. You have to get it going.
Get it out there. Yeah. You've got podcasts. You've got the Sober Club. You always talk to people about those things. And you can always add those things in later as a kind of volume two. You know?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, thank you, Lee. It's really good, fun to chat with you. And,
enjoyed it.
I hope you get over to the UK soon. You know, it'd be really great.
Yeah,
to
I do. Missing my boy. I haven't seen him for nearly a year now.
Oh, my God. Yeah. 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 Mm. So let's hope things change and we get to meet up. We should definitely do an event together. I'd love to do that. It'd be fun.
Yes, how fun will that be, right? Like,
it'd have to be quite a long one though, because it's never shut
the
us
other
up.
Thing, the other thing I want to do, Janie, as well, like in the future, I want to build rehabs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like not like rehabs
proper,
that people
proper optimum health and well-being rehabs.
You know, the ones where they go in and they don't want to leave.
Yeah.
They don't want to leave because they love it so much. Yeah. That type of rehab.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Amazing. Maybe we could do that together as
that'd
well.
Be very cool.
You,
love
you
it.
You could be the nurse. I could be the receptionist. I'm growing my hair now, so it's nearly as long as yours.
Looks good. Long hair looks really good on you. It's
California.
Great. We do it on our own choice in the UK because all the goddamn hairdressers are closed. It's desperate. No. Have they thought about what they're doing to us gals?
No, what are they
bad
doing?
Hair days? My God.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah,
anyways.
Bodily hairs all over the place.
And on that happy note, we'll talk soon. Thanks ever so much, Lee. Take care.
No worries. Much love.
So check out Lee's work. And of course, I'd love you to check out the book, Happy, Healthy, Sober, Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life. The paperback's out February the 11th. The ebook is out now. I think I hit a bestseller list of some kind last week, which was great. Lots of information in there for if you're just starting out, first 30 days, challenge-y type stuff. And then masses and masses of info about all aspects of health and well-being and mindset, as well as lots by leading experts who have contributed to the book. And there's a foreword by Denise Welsh. And if you have bought the book, there's some free resources that come along with it as well. So make sure you you sort of do the sign up to the website thing that comes with the book and get yourself, I think there's a meditation we've got on there and a bunch of other stuff. So it'd be great to have you involved. And obviously, if you know, one of the main things that we recommend is getting connected. It makes such a massive difference. It's great if you're, putting yourself out there on social media and you're sharing how you're getting on. It's great if you've got family, friends who support you. But there's something really magical about being part of a community where people have been there, done it, got the T-shirt. You know, some are at the same stage as you and some have got their tips and their stories to share. So do check out the Sober Club. It's thesoberclub.com. I think sometimes people think it's huge. It's one of those huge kind of groups, but it's actually really small and kind of intimate. And I'm in there all the time. So if you want access to, you know, my tips and ideas, then that's the place to be. So thesoberclub.com, it's a membership portal and we have absolute ton of amazing content in there, expert interviews, just everything really. There's a whole nutrition and fitness section. There's a whole section on mindset and mindfulness and meditation. We have lots of free audios and, you know, everything's included. And there's a course, Get the Buzz Without the Booze, a 90-day course that is included as in the membership. And there's a whole ton of motivational stuff. And of course, in addition, we have online meetups, coachings and catch-ups. We have experts who come and do stuff for us. We've got an amazing expert next week, Yakov Darling-Khan, who is going to do some movement medicine with us. We've got a grief expert, to change your subject completely, coming and chatting to us. So there's really a ton of stuff. As you know, it really is so much more than just an online community. There's a whole wealth of stuff there. So obviously we'd be very, pleased if you wanted to join us, thesoberclub.com. I've got lots of great guests coming up in the next few weeks. Really looking forward to interviewing Dr. Marilyn Glenville. I've been wanting to chat to her for so long. She's an absolute expert and queen of women's health, but she's extremely knowledgeable about all aspects of health and well-being. And I'm really looking forward to getting her take on where alcohol fits in, or rather where it doesn't, and exactly what happens to us when we drink alcohol and how we can repair some of that damage, particularly for those of us, you know, who are drinking for years. So very much looking forward to that interview. I've also got an interview with Rosalind Palmer, who did a great session for us in the Sober Club. And I thought we'd share the interview part, at least with all of you. Rosalind's going to be talking about goal setting, but how we can, it's much more than that. It's how we can use mindfulness and how we can get rid of the limiting beliefs. And then I've got a money mindset coach coming on soon. So that's something else completely different. Looking forward to interviewing Mrs. D, Lotta Dan, around her new book and so much more. If you have suggestions of guests that you'd like me to try and get hold of, then please let me know. I can always always give it a go. And as always, I'd love your feedback on the podcast. Let me know what you think of them. Let me know your favourites. We're coming up to 2 years, which is amazing. Absolutely amazing. Wow, 2 years worth of episodes. So yeah, please let me know your favourites and obviously, rate and reviewers, all of that stuff. If you buy the book, by the way, if you buy the ebook, I would so appreciate a review on Amazon. It makes a huge amount of difference, I'm told. Whatever you're up to, stay safe, stay positive, seriously. Try and keep those vibes high, as they say. See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.